Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again and welcome. We're sort of looking at omens for things to talk about, and you've just looked out of the window and your omen is?
My omen is that the very first thing I noticed was the beautiful beginnings of the fir cones on your fir tree. And that, I mean, I don't know if anyone else has noticed this year, but oh my goodness, every single one of the fir tree family have the most extraordinary abundance of the beginnings of cones this year.
Cool. No, I haven't noticed that.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm having one of those brain kind of incapacity moments. I can't think the name of the tree, but there is a tree whose fir cones begin as little, like, blood red blobs on the end of the tree, and then they slowly turn into the amazing brown of fir cones. And I'm sure the tree begins with S, but I still can't come
spruce.
Up with what it is. Spruce. Thank you. And it just made me think of, that's a whole nother one of those stories where we can go into the moni or into the celebration. I'm sure there are that many cones and that many buds and that many flowers and all the rest of it, because it's been pouring with bloody rain for weeks.
Yes, the grass is coming up to the windows.
Yeah, it's amazing, the extraordinary verdance that is created by this great load of water that's coming out of the sky. And that speaks very kind of well to your version, your experience of reality is so whatever you make it. You know, you can choose to be in, oh, it's raining all the time. Yeah. Or you can choose to be in, wow, look at the green.
Yeah.
You know, somebody pointed out to me years ago that the reason Ireland, where I went so much as a child, and the West Country are so magnificently green is because it rains a lot.
Yes.
And you can't have one without the other.
Yes. Yes, fertility, you've got out of the water, absolutely.
Totally.
Absolutely, yes. And to be fair, let's be honest, it gets depressing when it rains every day for a while, and it's perfectly okay to honour that, but you can also look at the beauty.
Yeah.
And I also love things like Facebook brings up memories for you about what you posted a year ago, and you and I last year were posting beautiful pictures of the countryside every day because we were in the first lockdown.
Yeah.
So it's reminding me. And what's absolutely beautiful is I'm looking at, for the first time ever, I'm comparing the season with last year. This time last year, the lilac was pretty much over. But time, the lilac's just coming out. And I'm finding that fascinating, learning and honouring the different pacings of the season and really appreciating it.
Yeah, same. That's funny, isn't it?
Yeah,
I was exactly the same. That, oh, isn't it interesting? Firstly, that I'm reasonably convinced, I mean, weather-wise and plant-wise, we do seem to be some weeks up to a month behind where we were last year.
Mm.
But also, the bizarreness of each day, it gives me a memory, and so often it's exactly what I'm doing again. You know, I'm going to the same bluebell places to go, about the bluebells.
Yes.
I get very drawn to the river at this time of year, kind of in particular, perhaps. I'm clearly just doing the same little rounds over and over again, which I was aware of. But it's such a kind of reminder of so much changes and so little changes all at the same time, which is, I don't know, I do find that deeply reassuring, but perhaps I'm just an old stick in the mud, I don't know.
Well, you're an old stick, obviously.
Obviously an old stick.
Yes. I don't know about, and in the mud quite frequently.
Oh, very frequently. Oh yeah, and talking of which, I'm now a strong devotee of that marvellous statement that comes from Child Education Outdoors in the Wood, I can't think what it's called, but that there is no such thing as bad weather, only inappropriate clothing.
Yes.
And have so recognised that when I feel really pissed off because I feel like I can't go outside, that it has been because my Mac leaks.
Yes.
And that I went to Proper Job, which for those of you who don't live locally is our local reuse and recycle centre. And there, in exactly my size, not really my colour, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers, was a really well-waxed old barber.
Yes.
And it's totally transformed my life.
Yes.
Now there's no such thing as a kind of, you know, oh, I can't go out because it's bloody pouring with rain. I just don't care. I put on my completely waterproof coat and off I go.
Exactly the same. And when I went into the town, into Okehampton, to go have a good mooch around the charity shops because I was dropping stuff off. And two bags at each place, you know, because you don't want to overwhelm them. They've been so overwhelmed and we've been clearing out quite a lot. And I just went into Oxfam and there was the most beautiful, extraordinary and the right colour waterproof coat, which comes down to my knees. Brand new.
Wow.
£8. And it's transformed my dog walking as well in the wet because I'm just going, put on the Aussie hat, put on the coat and you're going to be dry.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Make such a difference.
And in the very next shop, British Heart Foundation, the most beautiful, perfect size swimsuit. It's a bit bright, but it's absolutely lovely. And I thought, well, there's an affirmation. So I've got everything for the English summer, swimsuit and Macintosh.
So
if I get up to Shilly Pool and get in the water this year, I can put the Mac on and come back down the hill again.
It is funny, isn't it, though? There are certain circumstances where we're perfectly happy to be drenched.
Yes.
And other where it says, I can't go out there because I'm going to get wet.
There's he's now dead, a spiritual teacher called Stuart Wilde, who went a bit lizardish in the end, but was magnificent for many years.
A bit what-ish?
Lizardish, you know, we're all ruled by lizards.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of thing. But he wrote a book called Infinite Self, which saved my life in Montana. It was absolutely extraordinary. And he said, the way to deal with the ego is two ways. First, you learn that if it's wet, you do wet.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and throw yourself in a river every day for 2 weeks. That'll teach it.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't managed to do that yet.
Well, 4 o'clock in the morning does seem...
A little excessive.
A little excessive, yes. Yes, why 4 o'clock in the morning?
Well, just because you really, really wouldn't want to do it, I think.
Fair. Yeah, but I mean, that kind of that story aside, the throwing yourself in extremely cold water is... becoming a thing now.
It is becoming a thing.
Really realise that it's so good for us.
Yes.
And
as, do you know why?
I think it's all about the way it boosts the serotonin
in
us, possibly. Don't know, not a biologist, haven't really researched it. But I know from my own experience of getting into really, really bloody cold water is you do feel incredible when you come out.
Yes, you do.
Feel so good, so alive,
yes,
so aware of your own physical being.
Yes.
And that I wonder if it's that for too many people, they are not fully kind of in their physical being.
Not in their senses.
Much of the day.
Yeah.
And that when you get that whoa feeling of I'm really alive, I know I'm alive, I've been freezing cold and now I'm warming up and it feels amazing, that it's not just a kind of boost to you on a serotonin level or whatever it is, but that it's a boost to the whole thing of our awareness that we are actually in a body and yes, alive,
yes,
and that things like being cold, really, really cold, if you're doing it in a Dartmoor river, is an experience that you can survive.
Yes.
And even could make you thrive. Whereas I think a lot of us, and I do actually speak for myself as well, I really hate being cold.
Mm.
I am quite happy to get in a Dartmoor river in summer when it's super warm outside. Yes. But there is definitely a bit of me where the story is almost kind of, you know, I can't thrive, I can't do anything when I'm really cold.
Yeah.
And that perhaps it's counter to that story.
You're probably right, actually, because of course you're right, sorry, that patronising, didn't mean it that way. When I learned scuba diving, most people nowadays learn it in somewhere like the Seychelles, well, not this last year, obviously, but in the hot tropics. I learned it in a great big pit in Leicestershire.
Oh, I bet that was chilly.
Oh, God, it was cold. In fact, one of the things they advised us to do was pee in our wetsuit.
To warm it up?
Yeah. Oh, God, it's gorgeous. Oh, God. It's gorgeous. Oh, I can't tell you the absolute joy of peeing in your wetsuit. Especially at the bottom of a reservoir in Leicester. And I have been scuba diving in the tropics, and it is wonderful and it is exhilarating, but nothing was like coming out of that cold reservoir in Leicester and thinking, I have survived a dive in cold, dark and faced off a pike.
Wow, that's what I was saying. Well, I mean, I kind of understand scuba diving in the tropics because of what you can see.
Mm.
What on earth made you want to go scuba diving in a pit in Leicester?
My husband bought a scuba diving course for me for my birthday, so that when we went to a place like the tropics, I could just go scuba diving.
Could go scuba, okay.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah, and I did, and I have, which is, but mind you, I'm so out of practice now, it wouldn't work. But there is something for me, I'm terrified every time, even when I snorkel, having had an encounter with a barracuda, it didn't help. And I was terrified at the Red Sea when we went there because, and oddly enough, the following week somebody was attacked by a shark. So I've got that sort of mental thing to it. But once I'm under the water, I'm a fish. First time I actually did do scuba in the sea, the instructor said, "You're an absolute natural. Why were you so reluctant to go in?" But that sums it all up, which is, it's scary down there. It's scary in the cold water. I could die. So the coming out of it is, I've come to myself. I've come to the teferic point of being awake. That's why people climb mountains and do the extreme sports. But that also becomes an addiction. You learn that's the only way you can come to yourself, which it isn't.
No.
But you can understand why people do it.
Yeah. I suppose, also there's a lot to be said for the coming to yourself, or maybe even the going out of yourself, of a massive adrenaline rush.
Yes.
Which is presumably what a lot of that's about.
Yes, yes, I think it is, yes. Because you have to be in fight or flight.
Yeah.
But it's fight or flight that you've chosen, which of course, and that brings us back to the original point, you chose that fear.
Yes.
That makes all the difference.
Yeah.
It's the fear you didn't ask for that you resist.
Yes. Yeah, good point.
So I suppose the answer to that is coming back to our house thing, which is saying, okay, this is part of providence. God knows that I am perfectly okay, though irritated, about being moved to be where God wants me to be. Where can I be of assistance? Where can I be of use? Where do I need for me, for my sake? You know, what I'm quite happy to give that up and say what appears to be a bloody inconvenience, I'm going to choose to see as God trying to put me somewhere better.
Okay, but is there not then, where's free will in this?
So my choice to look at it in the way that I do.
Okay.
And that affects the outcome.
Batted back, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Just that I've got a small bee in my bonnet, smallish bee in my bonnet, around the difference between service and servitude.
Oh, God, yes. Yes. Yes, but if you give your life, if you say, and officially I have done this, and I've done it many times, officially I've lain down on the floor with my arms out saying, my life in your service.
Is that what happens at ordination?
Yes, do with me as you will.
Okay.
And that's terrifying, Susie.
I bet.
It's in our repentance prayer before Mass every day, do with me as you will. And there's some days I sit and say, today I can't say it. And I'm sorry, but I can't say it. And that's also fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that truly is service, not servitude. When on the days you can, and on the days you can't, you can't.
Yeah.
And it's when you don't believe that you have any right or agency to say, today I can't, is when it becomes servitude.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the same in that slavery.
Yeah.
That's what people still do in happy families and they don't realise it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or so-called happy families. Yes, absolutely.
Well, back then to our discussion of 3 weeks ago around the mother in us who is supposed to tend us is when she is in servitude and not in service.
Yes.
Then she becomes incapable of properly tending us, filling the cup.
Yeah. Yeah, and we have put we're trying to put the planet into servitude. Well, we have done.
We have done, yeah.
And she wants to offer a service the whole time. And the story in Braiding Sweetgrass, Robin Wall Kimmerer, that sweetgrass actually thrives when pulled up by humans.
Yes.
That is a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Now, why would that happen?
Yeah.
You know, that's just so beautiful.
Totally. And that, again, that speaks to that thing of, if only we could realise that we are beloved of the mother.
Yes.
That we would understand that the reciprocity of that, I am offering you sweet grass, you are offering me picking it.
Yeah.
I am offering you apples, you are offering me, you know, the planting of orchards along with your ongoing health, etc., etc. Yes. That there's so much Oh, that all the abundance of all of creation is offered in partnership with us. Mm. And instead we've gone, no, don't do that, do this, and made it into products. It's products is a word I really love.
I have a bit of a thing about corn.
Corn?
Yes, because most of it's so highly processed, it isn't actually food.
Q-U-O-R-N.
Yes. Yes. And I'm, there's certain people who are making it organically and beautifully, but I've just, apparently, or so they claim, but you just see all these things in supermarkets, cause, and it's expressed as virtue because it's vegan and it's low carbon footprint. And I look at it and go, yeah, I hear you, but it's not food. It's not something that you pick up out of the ground. And I do, if I possibly can, like to focus on things that were alive. Yeah. I know the corn was bits of the ingredients.
Isn't it? I thought it was a mushroom.
I think it is a mushroom, but it has to be really heavily processed and stretched. And of course, if it's not organic, if it's anything to do with soya, it's genetically modified. But then, now I'm going off on a complete tangent. I only found out quite recently we invented lemons. Humanity developed the lemon.
Okay.
The lemon is not natural.
Wow.
I didn't know that, did you?
No, I had not a clue before this very second.
Yeah, I presume we made it out of orange and cross-pollinating oranges and grapefruits.
Oh.
I don't know any more about it than that, but I just sat there with my jaw open because I automatically assumed that a lemon was just came from the Holy One. So we have this moot point in that we've invented something as extraordinary as the lemon in harmony with nature. Something that is the best thing on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, having made lemon curd recently.
Yeah.
You know, when you get given lemons, make lemon curd. So that's wonderful genetic modification. But it still produced something that grows and reproduces itself and therefore is a happy addition to the planet.
Yeah.
It's the things that won't reproduce themselves that we're growing and making food from that worries me, because we actually have taken the life force out of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
And so that does worry me, because, yes, and some of my comedian friends have been trying vegan months and things like that, and they're not into the spiritual work that we are. And they're all eating this corn and saying, oh, yes, munch, munch, munch. And I'm sort of thinking, I hear you, I see you, but I can't see how that's benefiting anybody.
Mm.
Maybe I'm silly. I don't know. I don't know. I also have this slight thing about...
Well, doesn't it also, if corn's a thing that's basically made in a factory, then by eating corn, you are inviting a world full of factories.
Yes.
Whereas if spinach is a thing that grows in the ground and you eat lots of spinach, you're inviting and creating a world where there's ground in which green things grow.
Thank you. You have absolutely summed up what I feel about it. Thank you. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's what I feel about it, which is why I wouldn't buy corn. Or I would buy corn sausages or something like that.
Mm.
I did do once. I also made vegan cheese once.
Oh, Lord,
I did not do well with
that.
What
is this made out of?
Cashews and things like that. Okay. Flavouring. And vegan bacon. I'm sure there are many people that make wonderful stuff, but I got to the point where I thought, I am murdering this aubergine.
Yeah.
To try and make a take.
What I completely don't understand about that is, if you're a vegan, why do you still want to eat cheese and bacon when they're not made out of... the cow produce and the pig produce. Sure, why aren't you happy to... I mean, I don't know. I'm feeling like I'm being kind of...
Yes, we're both...
mean and bitchy, but I really don't get it.
No, if it makes you happy, fine. Absolutely. If it makes you happy, fine. But I don't get it either.
No.
No.
But I'm, you know, I don't... I very, very, very rarely eat meat. I do occasionally eat meat because I have an agreement with the deer that if presented with venison... I will eat and honour it.
Yes. Use everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I don't...
It's ruffling, by the way, is Sappho having a sapphic rise on the floor.
A sapphic rise? Bless her. She's lots of sapphic rising. Wriggling around on the carpet like a gooden, scratching her itches, aren't you?
Sorry, I derailed you there.
No, well, good. It's good to derail me on that particular one, just because so what if I think it's weird to eat bacon made out of something that isn't a pig. I mean, it's all in the name, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And I don't personally eat bacon, and I wouldn't eat vegan bacon, but let us all eat in a way whatever we want to eat and call it whatever we like. But for me, as long as it's respecting the great abundance of she who made everything, which my suspicion, but I do not know, is that these things don't.
Yes. Well, as you said, factory produced.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it also, it just goes back to that whole thing, doesn't it, of currently our culture, most of our culture, it's kind of in defence of the corporation because it's the corporation that we believe that supports us.
Yes.
Because we buy our vegetables from Marks and Spencer's rather than going to pick them in the field or...
Yeah, and it's wider than that too. I had a crone hissy fit yesterday.
Marvellous.
With the estate agents who are handling the sale of my mother's house because they forward emails with attachments, which are letters to my mother. And you saw it on Facebook.
It was so funny. You have to tell it as a story now.
Oh, well, fair enough. I had the... it was just basically that in this modern world of ours, you don't really want emails coming to you with attachments which aren't addressed to you. And I have a complex spam filter which Lion developed for me, which is perfect, which puts anything that doesn't say Dear Maggie with a Y into my spam filter because the majority of people... know my name is Maggie with a Y. So, and Maggie IE is automatically slightly suspect. There were a lot of people do it because autocorrect isn't my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I was getting these emails that were had attachments for my mother and I emailed back and said, could you please, I'm not Mrs. Whitehouse. It just says Mrs. Whitehouse important attachment. And I went back and said, well, I'm not Mrs. Whitehouse. I'm Reverend Whitehouse, which was me being snotty. But, as polite as I could, saying, can you please do this because it's going to my spam filter? And anyway, and she came back with this sort of, it's how we do it, you can opt out. And I wrote her this letter, could I quote it?
Go on.
I was really, this was just complete crone no. Thank you for your reply, which was the normal, slightly defensive, this is what we do and you have to put up with it or opt out reply of the modern world. Bitch. However, you did spell my name correctly, for which I am very grateful. Yes, I do realise that I'm an irritating old fart and it doesn't matter what I think because your system is more important than the individual and you don't have time for this kind of rubbish. But that, I mean, that's me just really letting one off and I did put at the end no need to reply, which is my way of saying, for God's sake, don't reply.
Yes. Let's not go there.
Let's not go there. But that's the thing about the corporation. That's what their company does. And I did end it with saying, look, I don't want spam on my computer. I will not open something if I don't know that it's a trusted source. It just isn't that common sense for your company to have a look at that. And in the end, I just said, my father taught me a very important phase when I was young, which has served me very well. It's the customer is always right. The customer is always right, especially when you think the customer is wrong. The customer is the most important thing in your business because the customer is your business. And that, I thought, was a slap that did need to be given. Because it's so often in the modern world, it's not about the individual. It's not about the service. It's about this is how we do.
The convenience of the corporation.
Yeah. This is what we do. Face up to it.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't walk away from that estate agent because my brother's hired the estate agent, one he's used before for selling another house. And it's going through, but I would have.
Yeah.
I would have, actually.
There's a little bit of me that's sitting here completely laughing at us. We are being such a pair of old biddies.
We're old white middle class biddies, aren't we? Yes. How dare you treat me like a corporation?
In olden days, they knew how to do it.
So good.
We gave us personal service, but, you know, well, perhaps we just are. And I do think that's right, that, you know, we should be paying attention, yes, to the individual, not in a stupid, egoic, individualistic way, but in a compassionate and loving way of understanding that you and I and the spinach are more bloody important, way more important than any stupid freaking corporation that thinks it is.
Yeah.
Because we're what's real.
Yeah. And it's such simple things. I was in this Kabbalah group in London for a long time. And it was very, very good. It was very what we call Hodian, very intellectual. But it taught me so much. And it was the groundswell of everything that I've learned on the basis of it. But because it was in person and because the teacher was very highly respected, he was not expected to do the mummy stuff.
Okay.
But sometimes, and I have this online group, and now again, we have an in-person meeting group, which is lovely. And I've always based it on his rules because they're good rules. But there just comes a point when you realise the mummy stuff's needed because they're individuals.
Okay, what do you mean by the mummy
stuff? I meant the sending, bothering to send an email saying, I'm so sorry that your mother died.
Oh, yes.
Well, that wouldn't have been done in a esoteric group in the old days run by this bloke. It just wouldn't have been done. If you rang him up and asked him for help, he would say he was very sorry and certainly let you come round. But there would be no reaching out to people. But apart from anything else, he had thousands of people all over the world who studied with him. And I know how hard it is to deal with the emails that come in just from workshops.
Mm.
Because it's very time consuming. But it was about saying, okay, I am the leader of this group. It's a esoteric group. It is focused on group work, soul work, but there are also individuals in it. So it is entirely right for me to say, I was so sorry to hear about the death of your mother. If there is anything feasibly we can do, here is the Chapel of Liberation. If you want to check that her soul is okay, I can do it for you if you want to. I'm quite sure she is, but, you know, and the group all sends you our love. And I just got the one back saying, thank you, that meant such a lot.
Mm.
And I nearly didn't do it because I didn't have to.
Yeah.
And last night was the birthday of our eldest member, 96.
Wow.
So
happy birthday, eldest member.
Happy birthday, Bill. He won't be listening to this, bless him. We just said happy birthday. We didn't sing happy birthday or anything like that. And it was so nice because I just chaffed him for a bit. But I said, hang on a minute. You've been saying you've been 96 all year. And now you're telling me you're 96. You become one of those old people or one of those kids who always adds a year on to their age to make it more oppressive, haven't you? And everybody just fell out laughing and it was just a lovely moment. He said, well, I've been in my 96th year. And I went, yeah.
Or maybe he's just complete, like, dyscalculic like me.
Quite possibly.
Who accidentally, often, well, I've done it twice. Weirdly, I did it when I was 26. I said all year that I was 27 and then arrived at my, what I thought was my 28th birthday, only to discover it was in fact my 27th. And I did the exact same thing when I was 56. I thought I was 57 all year.
Yeah.
And not because I think it's in any way better, but just cocked it up. That's really bizarre.
Okay, well, so I think we need to close with a phrase I heard from my old BBC colleague Ed Doolan, but I think it's not older than that, which is never attribute malice when you can assume stupidity.
Oh, that's great. I should have that written on me somewhere.
And we're at 27 minutes, so actually I'm going to stop this because we have to go on and do other things. So we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. And please do remember, if you want to donate, we have got a Patreon account. So just Google Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch, Patreon, and you can sign up to buy us a cup of coffee if you'd like to. Not that we drink coffee, but...
You know, I do.
Oh, do you? Okay, yeah. Buy her a cup of coffee.
Buy her a cup of tea.
Nah, I object to buying cups of tea. Take my own tea with me. But you could buy me a bar of chocolate or a flower. Thank you.